Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Man, I hope you're having a great day. And just like we told you, images of the first two games do not necessarily represent what the series will become. Is your Father's Day, have you purchased your Father's Day present yet? What about your dad's razor? I tell these stories all the time. This is a real story. My dad used to have these gross razors that he didn't clean out. He used to shave every day with a disposable razor, and he would not dispose of them initially, and it was just gross. So getting him something new for Father's Day, a DSC six-blade razor, is perfect for an extra close, precise shave. Get one now at a store near you or as part of a gift set at dollarshaveclub.com/Doug. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Doug. Last night, the Clippers evened up the series 118-104. They did mess around a little bit in the second half, and it got to be reasonably competitive. But for the most part, they kept the Jazz in the first half at a 20-25 point disadvantage. Kawhi Leonard, 31-7-3. Paul George, 31-9-4. They're the fifth duo since 76-77. That's the NBA-ABA merger, with 30 points each in back-to-back playoff games. By the way, I think what Kyrie and LeBron are one of the other duos. I remember that happening in the finals. They're also the third duo in NBA history to score at least 20 plus points in their first 11 games in the playoffs. That's pretty damn good. This is Kawhi after the game.
I think we kind of made shots here. Game 3 and 4, just got some games under our belt pretty much. Coming out of the Dallas series, you know, it's a different team, different vibe. A better team. We just got to, see what we've been doing these last couple games and, just keep moving forward.
I'm actually really, really impressed by this team. And you're going to sit there and go like, well, yeah, obviously, Doug, prisoner of the moment. You come off of that game and you're no, but stick with me for a second. adversity exposes, right? Okay. Like in a relationship you have, when you go through adversity, it exposes stuff. If you have underlying issues within your relationship and you go through adversity, guy loses a job, somebody gets sick, parents are sick, or there's some sort of natural disaster, or a kid, God forbid something happens with a kid or a pregnancy or whatever, that exposes everything that is either right or wrong within your relationship. The same is true with athletes, sports teams, coaches. How you handle adversity, it's one of the reasons that you should keep score. Now, do you have to keep score when they're 5, 6, 7, and 8? Like, no, it's not really that big. But once you get to where they're, 11, 12 years old, catching an ass whooping isn't the worst thing in the world. Being down 20 and processing it and understanding it, it's not the worst thing in the world. You can, in fact, overcome it. You can overcome it, or more than anything, you can learn from it so that when you get to be an adult, you're like, you think this is bad. Remember the time we got beat by 50? Remember the time we were down? I had a group of kids I coached 2 weekends ago. And about 2 months ago, we played in a game and we were leading the whole game. And then we were down 4 with 44 seconds to go. And my point guard, not my son, different age group, was crying at the time. Crying. So then you go to play in a championship game, and this is 2 weeks ago, same team. We're down 5 with 33 seconds to go. We end up forcing overtime, actually having a chance to win it, but forcing overtime, winning in overtime, the same kid's mentality was completely different. I told him, if you think it's over, it is in fact over, even though it's not. Actually over until it's over. Does that make sense there? I'm not really sure. The point is very simple. Okay? Adversity exposes. And here's two straight series where the Clippers get down 2-0, and people start coming out of the woodwork, say, same old Clippers. And while we were questioning the narrative that they were spreading going back to the previous series, we're not concerned at all. Not even a little bit. Adversity exposes. And what has it shown us? It's shown us that, honestly, Ty Lue's done an amazing job. Not just in keeping them composed, but also the adjustments that he's made. And then the adjustments that he's made are great, but he's also kept the players balanced. And then Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, they haven't lost their stuff. So I think when you rationalize what exactly has taken place, they fall down 2-0 last series and people go, same old Clippers. Oh, you can't stop Luka. And I was concerned as well. I think it's reasonable if you're outside of that locker room to go like, man, now all of a sudden, what happens if you have a guy go down for a game? What happens if a team just gets hot and throws in a bunch of threes in a game? Same thing gonna happen against Utah. But they stuck with it. They made some adjustments. They made some shots. They tinker with their defense. They tinker with their offense. They tinker with the rotation. And guess what? I don't know anybody who thinks as long as they stay healthy, they're not going to win this series. Adversity exposes, and what it's exposed of the Clippers is that's a group of grownups that are focused on the prize. And you know what? I think they might just get there. Now, there's a lot that goes into it. It is far from done. Utah is still a really good team. They're very good at home. Plus, they're going to have not only home court advantage, but the altitude advantage. Like, all these things are, in fact, real. Right? But I don't know a human being alive that thought this would be the result of the Clippers series. I don't. Do you? I mean, especially in Los Angeles, where the second something goes bad, everybody starts chuckling and says, same old Clippers, same old Clippers, same old Clippers. Right? Not the same old Clippers. This team is composed. This team is ready. And this team, more than anything, how you deal with adversity shows who you actually are. Yeah, Gavin, you wanted to throw something in. Go ahead.
Was there a specific adjustment you see that Ty Lue made that has been the biggest? Because to me, it felt like, you know, sitting Patrick Beverley, and then I think now it's Rondo that's sitting this series.
Yes.
That seems to be the biggest difference.
Correct. Yeah. You nailed it. It's finding who to play. And it's not just who you play, but who do you play them with? Like he has quietly ended the playoff Rondo thing, right? I mean, go and look last night at what happened. Rondo, I don't think Rondo dressed.
No, he didn't. He was in.
He did not dress. Right? He's used Luke Kennard smartly. He's dialed back the Terrence Mann thing, although Terrence Mann gave him some really good minutes in terms of energy. He didn't make a shot, but in terms of energy, you know, he's used Zubac smartly. Changing the starting lineup. I mean, look, Nick Batum didn't even, I think he was like 1-6, and the game's not close. So Batum makes a couple of threes in the start of the second half when it was still a 25-point game. But so many teams in the NBA go back to who they started and how they started, and then they adjust from there. He didn't. He was just like, look, Zubac does not help us at either end. When they have their big on the floor, we're going to play him 18 minutes. We're not going to start with him. We'll use him smartly. So I would say it's the Rondo thing and the adjustment of Zubac's minutes. I mean, look, Marcus Morris, 5 threes last night, 5. Incredibly valuable. And they want to play small and open up the floor and try and get Rudy Gobert away from the rim. When he's at the rim, they're hard to play against. When he's away from the rim, it's a lot easier. So those are the two, and it's who you play and how you play and when you use Zubac and all those things, which seem to be working the best. By the way, Tucson Rick. Tucson Rick. Are you doing the show today? I was hoping to have somebody else. Sorry, Rick. Out of luck. Apologize. Jonas is doing mornings right now as they're trying to figure out what to do with Clay. So sorry you couldn't hear Jonas and Beyer. You will hear Beyer upcoming. I mean, I like listening to Beyer too. Sometimes I just stop talking so the Beyer will pick up and go, there's dead air. He's better than me. No question. Keep the tweets coming at Gottlieb Show. At Gottlieb Show. We do have some breaking news or some new news that you may have heard on James Harden. I'll share that with you upcoming. Can you name the five? The five combos are not actually terribly difficult to find. You ready for them? Okay. So Kyrie and LeBron was 2017, the back-to-back 30-point games each. PG and Kawhi. You need three more since the merger. Okay, there's only the combos I would think of with 30 or more points. I can't think of a Bird and McHale would be one, but I don't remember them doing it. Magic and Kareem maybe, or Worthy and Kareem maybe, but I don't remember them doing it. Jordan and Pippen, Kobe and Shaq seems to be likely answers. And then I was thinking of another one. So it's actually Jordan and Pippen in 92, Shaq and Kobe in 2002. And Akeem and Clyde Drexler in 95. I forgot they were on the same team. Remember Clyde the Glide went to play for the Houston Rockets.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
A guy knows a thing or two about men who throw the football or throw a baseball, both topics of discussion, Tom House. He's the father of pitching. And, of course, he's most famously Tom Brady's throwing coach. He joins us. Of course, he's a world-renowned expert in biomechanics. Over 50 years, he's been teaching Major League Baseball and younger pitchers and a pitching coach. He's also a throwing coach for now-retired Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and others. He's got a new app out I want to talk to you about. Tom, how are you?
Very good, Doug. Thanks for having me on.
I want to ask you about the substances that pitchers are using. You get the old school guys like, hey, this has been going on for a long time. But, of course, hitters now, historically low hitting numbers in baseball. Is it that the stuff is better that they're using on the baseballs for better grips and tighter spin rates on curveballs? Or is this the same old, and hitters are trying to find excuses?
Well, it's all the above and everything else. So, yeah, in the long haul, pitching always beats hitting. And there, remember 5 or 8 years ago during the big, or maybe 10 years ago when the big steroid thing hit, how hitting was beating up on pitching? Mm-hmm. I think it's great for baseball that these little controversies and, you know, witch hunts come up all the time. But I really, at this point in time, substances on the ball, you're exactly right. It's been done before. It's being done right now. The difference is when Major League Baseball sits in and says something is illegal, now it forces kind of a reevaluation of the risk-reward of doing it. Did that make sense?
It does. It does. Well, but there is something to the – it's like, you know, pitchers will tell you, they'll say, look, you know, without this, like, you know, I throw a breaking ball, it'll hit a guy. Like, no, there's a limit to what a human body can do, right? There's a limit, no matter how much you train in terms of running the 40, there's a limit to what a human body can ever do. Like, we're not going to run sub 4:40s, I don't think, ever. And
right.
And so, like, you know, like, look, a hard slider is hard enough to hit with, you know, but you can't throw all out. Not just because you'll wreck your arm, but you can't grip a baseball like that without a little bit of help. And so the reason that pitchers haven't done it at this speed for a long time wasn't because they couldn't do it, was because they couldn't control it, and it would either hit a guy, you know, or be a ball. And I think this kind of brings that. I'm with you, and I understand good pitching beats good hitting, but I do think there's a limit, and this kind of dials back that limit some.
Well, I agree with you on part of that. And some of the other things that people aren't really bringing up, the strike zone is being enforced 8 to 10 inches higher than it's ever been done before. So that quote-unquote rising fastball it's harder to get to. More athletes, more hitters are getting hit because it is higher. They have less time to get out of the way. Obviously, it is what it is. But you're aware that when a baseball comes out of the box, you know who the first people to touch it are. Have you heard this before?
No.
The umpires. The umpires, especially in my generation, rubbed up every ball before it went between the lines. So baseballs show up from the factory with a kind of a sheen on them, and in the history of the game, umpires have always rubbed up however many dozen balls it used to take to get through a game. So right out of the chute, a foreign substance is being applied to the Rawlings ball. It's Mississippi mud. I think it's still the same. It's used in both football and baseball. And again, the umpires get to the ballpark early and they rub up 12, 15, 18 dozen balls with Mississippi mud before they become game balls. So that's never brought out. And then what is pine tar legal? Is rosin legal? Is dirt legal? And then how do they ID what the perfect substance is? We now it's been defined that whatever they've been doing to get these spin rates higher is no longer legal. So I'm sure they're going to specify which substances are involved. But now that it's been laid out and it's illegal, everybody's going to adjust. And you're aware that hitters use rosin and sticky for a better grip on the bat, and bats are lasered and treated and way different than they were 25 years ago. So technology moves forward. The athletes are better athletes today. They throw harder, they get closer, and spin rate and the new strike zone has actually caused kind of a reevaluation of what's going on.
It's Doug Gottlieb's show here on Fox Sports Radio. That's the voice of the legendary pitching and throwing coach, Tom House. He joins us. Tom, we've discussed it at great length, you and I have, on Tom Brady and elasticity and his ability to continue throwing at the velocity that he's been throwing at. What about Cam Newton? You know, Cam, he's had a couple shoulder operations, and he's never been great in terms of being mechanically sound. Again, this is not me breaking it down. It's just what has been. I'm just repeating what I hear from people like yourself that have broken down his mechanics in the past. Can he get it back? Because it looked like his arm was shot the past couple of years in terms of his inability to consistently make what normal NFL throws. Can he get that back?
Doug, your observations are solid. Remember, you throw with your feet. And Cam, I was actually involved and got to help in his rehab when he was still down with the Panthers. And I thought his throwing mechanics improved with the health of his shoulder. Then he hurt his foot. So in effect, I think he went about a year and a half without really, and then on top of that, COVID showed up. Cam is a hell of an athlete, and I would never bet against him. And I'm going to assume, even though I haven't worked with him on throwing or conditioning for over a year, I'm sure that where he is right now, he's a healthier athlete and a more efficient thrower than he has been in the last 2 years. You got to bet that his athleticism, the coaching that he's going to get and the conditioning that he's going to get from the Patriots have to end up with a more efficient and effective quarterback this year than the last two.
Tom House joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Of the new guys, you know, you got the Trevor Lawrences of the world. It does seem like a lot of players, they try and get mechanically sound maybe later in their career. Obviously, Drew, it felt like it was... It wasn't right away in his career. Tom's been with you for a long time, right? Since he started as a pro. What's generally the pattern for NFL quarterbacks? Are they mechanically sound coming in, or do they come to you after they've had some sort of failure in the National Football League?
Well, it's I get the same questions from organizations that are evaluating the talent before the draft. And in today's world right now, quarterback world, there are athletes that can, runners that can throw and throwers that can run. And then a few of them are both. So if you look at the draft and the way it trickled down, organizations seem to go after a player that would fit their system. And I think the best example to explain the three versions of quarterbacks that I just spoke about, if you looked at the Ravens, they drafted an athlete that could throw. And now, to your observation, he is trying to improve his throwing mechanics. Then there's organizations that drafted a thrower who could run. And that would be like the kid from Philadelphia that's now with the Colts, maybe the kid that was with the Rams and he's now...
Yeah, Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, yeah.
Yes, thank you very much for helping me with the names. And then you get the combo critter, the guys that can do most, and there's the kid in Kansas City, the Mahomes. So they're all three, the prototype that you talked about, all three of them are out there, and it was typical in the draft that we came through. And you'll recognize what quarterbacks are which. So, again, without getting too windy on this, it's matching the organizational philosophy for quarterbacks with the available talent and trying to, you know, wherever they go, trying to optimize their capacity to run with their capacity to throw and come up with a winning combination for each team. Was that too confusing?
No, absolutely not. Okay, so now try and do the same thing and explain what Mustard is. Mustard is a new app, right?
Yes, sir, it is. And thank you so much for asking. Boy, you're setting me up. I have to pal around with you more often. You make this really easy. So everything that you and I are talking about right now as sports fans and observers of traits and trends, everything that we've done for the last 50 years with this Mustard app and a cell phone, you can help kids develop from little league age all the way through to the 40-year-old kids without having to come out and spend 3 days going through motion analysis and force plate and wireless EMGs. It's an effort by some really smart people to humanize artificial intelligence and make it accessible to the 120 million youth athletes out there that would normally quit playing by age 14 for lack of information and access to instruction. It can now be done with Mustard. And this Mustard app is focusing on pitching right now with, you know, throwing a football and then hitting and golf. In other words, we're going to hit all the sports. But as we're coming out of the beta testing, the first part of the app is going to be all about pitching and how to develop that.
It's interesting because, I'll coach youth basketball, right? And I stand behind kids and show them how they're shooting the basketball, make a very simple adjustment. Like the easiest adjustment shooting a basketball, right, is are you shooting with one hand or are you thumbing it? Or are you getting maybe your thumb and your index or your left hand if you're a right-hand shooter on the basketball? And, you know, kids will hold their follow-through as if they're shooting like Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, when in reality, they're shooting with two hands.
Yeah,
And then you have to decide, okay, is he strong enough? And do we want to radically change it to a one-hand shot? Because if you watch, you know, I was texting with Trey Young's dad. Trey Young, though, at the end, he has one hand. He does use his left thumb. Ray Allen uses his left thumb. I guess two parts to it. One, in terms of Mustard, is that the basic premise of the app where you're videoing your kid or a kid throw a baseball or a football, and then it sends you or an expert, and then you send back an analysis? Is that the idea behind it?
You're exactly right. You hit it dead on. We have these models that have been determined, put together through large samples. We started capturing motion analysis data at 1,000 frames a second in the mid-80s. So we have 900 plus major league computers. We've got a couple hundred NFL quarterbacks. We've got thousands of hitters and golfers. We know what human beings do to throw or swing. And there's like one set of rules. And you just talked about when you stand behind a kid that's shooting the basketball. There's one set of rules that if you want to get it in the hoop, these are the things you have to do. But there's a million ways to get it done there. It's called a signature. And what this mustard app does is it captures from the side or the front an athlete's backyard and a game conditions in a bullpen out, you know, throwing on flat ground, and goes into the cloud, and it's assessed based on these statistically validated models, and they identify with the variables that we've deemed critical how efficient they are, and then where they're less than 80% efficient, they come up with a recommended way to fix the problem. So not only are they motion analyzed for efficiency, they're given drills on what to do to improve their efficiency, whether it's neurological or muscular. So again, it's everything you and I are talking about condensed into a cell phone capture that a mom or a dad can film their 12-year-old in the backyard and get the same efficacy of analysis that the guys in the last 10 years had to come out and hang out with me for 3 days for.
There used to be this thought in pitching a baseball where, yeah, position two, right? Like you're almost like locking your arm out when you get that baseball down. And with my son and working with pitching coaches, like they're like, no, that's actually not what we want. We don't want your arm ever to be locked out. When you check the biomechanics, what is the proper way to throw a ball in terms of, do you lock out at position two, for example?
Well, there are biomechanical imperatives and there's biomechanical inevitabilities. And I'll give you the imperatives. He's got to have timing. There has to be a sequencing from feet to fingertip. And then within those dependent variables are the independent variables of balance and posture, lift and thrust, stride and momentum. There's three or four little things right into release point and follow through. And the cool thing is, Doug, everybody looks different doing exactly the same thing.
Right.
And the analysis over the years has determined that if you can address a position and fix it, it only takes one repetition to fix a position. But once you get into a moving part of the delivery, it can take thousands of reps to either repattern or rewire or reinforce a good neurological pattern. So, and that's another thing that, because of the models, has identified, we'll try to, when we get an assessment back, and it's usually within 3 minutes of capture.
Wow.
We'll try to put the kid in the right positions, male or female, then have them do their movement, and then the movements are pretty much dictated by how efficient they are as they initiate energy. An object at rest wants to stay at rest. Laws of inertia dictate,
sure,
you know, get it going, angles, distance, and time. In other words, if athletes were throwing rocks at rabbits to eat and being analyzed, and then looking at a major league pitcher or a 12-year-old pitcher, the common denominators would be so similar, it's scary. And you don't have to teach an arm slot. If the kid's eyes are level, arm slot happens. And you don't have to teach whether they throw across their body straight or whatever. In other words, we're genetically predisposed. But what has happened, me included, is we have a tendency to try to coach what something is natural and then ignore something that needs to be coached. The app itself with the mustard intelligence kind of takes all that guesswork out of it.
That's fantastic. The app is called Mustard. It's revolutionized the power of play by making widely accessible, automatic, hyper-personalized training plans for physical and mental training from two of the most successful coaches of all time, Tom House, who's our guest, and, of course, Jason Goldsmith. Tom, thanks so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure. We really appreciate it.
thank you for having me on, Doug. And anytime you, you know, I'm available anytime you want to hang out. Okay.
All right. Well, that's good. I'm going to annoy the hell out of him. Like, ugh. Okay, he's going to leave me on a, thanks, Doctor. Day.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. Question for you, is your dad's razor older than you? Get him something new for Father's Day, a DSC, that's Dollar Shave Club, 6-blade razors, perfect for those extra close, precise shaves. Get one now at a store near you as part of a gift set at dollarshaveclub.com/Doug. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Doug. James Harden worked his hamstring through shoot-around without an issue. He'll do the same on court tonight prior to tip versus Milwaukee with hopes of playing in Game 5 tonight. The problem with Harden, as he's been determined to be cleared to play, he's moved one step closer to joining Kevin Durant tonight, 2-2 between the Bucks and the Nets, is hamstrings will feel fine, and then all of a sudden you try to explode or push off, and you feel it tweak again, right? That's the issue with it. But there's lots of people go like, well, listen, LeBron did this for years. He just carried the team. Why can't we expect Kevin Durant to do the same? Why can't Kevin Durant carry a team? I'm sure you've heard that before, right? If LeBron can do it, why can't Kevin Durant? Don't give me this Kevin Durant is older sort of thing. That's a bunch of nonsense. Don't give me this. Don't give me that. It's all a bunch of nonsense. Kevin Durant is so good, he can carry a team. You know, look, I'm not going to lie to you. There's a certain amount of carrying a basketball team that he was having to do. And even Steve Nash said, yeah, we were trying to do a little bit too much. But I don't actually think that's really what's at play here. Okay, so here's what you have to understand about teams and styles. LeBron James, and this has been said and maybe not explained time and again on TV, is they'll say, well, LeBron James is the system. And there's, you know, you got to play LeBron's way. Okay, so when LeBron plays, he dominates the basketball. It's one of the things that I think Luka Doncic is going to have to go through, which is, you know, it's really hard to get a well-rounded team if you play where you give the ball to one guy and he so thoroughly and completely dominates the basketball, right? But you can play that way and you can be successful, but you have to, one, get used to playing that way, and two, you have to build the roster around that sort of guy. You know, if you look at this, Kevin Durant this year only played in 35 games. 35. Right? He only played in 35 games. So part of it is they haven't played with him a ton. Part of it is the team is not built to play. This team is constructed where you have three guys that average like 35 minutes, and they take, you know, 50 of the shots, and you play off of them. Now you have one guy, but the team is not constructed where to fill in for that guy. Do we understand? Right, like, if you throw in Landry Shamet with two other elite scorers, Landry Shamet's an outstanding shooter. He spaces the floor. But you throw him out there without two of their guys, and now he's forced to do much more. It's one of the reasons that in the past, when LeBron was on a team and it was built around him and he'd come off the floor, you go like, well, they're way worse for them. Yeah, because the team is completely built around playing one way, and then when he comes out, you got to play a different way. That's almost impossible, which is the opposite of what's going to happen or have to happen tonight if James Harden doesn't play. They were built to play one way, and now they're going to have to play another. So what all does that mean? It's interesting. Does that mean Kevin Durant can't do it? No, he can do it. But the likelihood of immediate or sustained success is not great. It's just not. It's not great because the team is not built that way. And even if they can kind of reconfigure themselves, It's hard to learn to do that on the fly. It's hard to learn to do that without trial and error, without, you know, the type of things that we talked about adversity. You know, you haven't had great games. You haven't had bad games. You haven't tried different looks and different, and to do that in the playoffs against a really good team, against a team that has Giannis. Look, this is no different than, well, Giannis can do it by himself. Yeah, the team is constructed around Giannis. How can we find ways in which we can play through his strengths and with his weaknesses and still succeed? Hope I'm making sense. I feel like I'm making sense. Byer, am I making sense in my argument? Kind of a nonsensical argument, but I thought it made sense. I was like commending myself, and then I was like, eh, maybe a little bit too early on that one. What about you, Gab? Do you get it, or do you have a retort?
Yeah, no, I do wonder how it affects the other side. Like, how do you think the Bucks are approaching this now that, you know, there's only Kevin Durant left and a little Joe Harris?
Well, obviously, you got to kind of load up on him. But, you know, if you put the right people around him, you know, that's one of the reasons Joe Harris is able to be successful, because you can hide what he doesn't do well off the dribble.
But I would think they could clog the lane now because there's not as many, you know, people to worry about on the outside. And
but is that actually true? That's therein lies the question. You know, can you actually clog the lane? Like, all right, well, if Bruce Brown's going to go and try and take over a game, the answer is yeah. Yeah. But otherwise, the answer is no. Right? And this is where you start to get into that, okay, how much do we use Blake Griffin now? How much do we use... You can't put DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin out on the floor at the same time, because then the lane gets clogged and Kevin Durant has visions of what it was like to play in Oklahoma City all over again. Now, if James Harden plays and he can play pretty well, completely different story.
By the way, when they started this season, Kyrie Irving basically said, we don't need a coach like Steve. Well, now you need a coach. So this is where Steve Nash is going to prove his worth.
Well, if you don't think you need a coach in the NBA... then you haven't paid attention to the playoffs, because I do believe that the coaching that's taken place with the Clippers has been great. The coaching that's taken place with the Hawks made some adjustments that's been really good. I think the Sixers have made some adjustments that have been very good. I think coaching absolutely matters.
It also feels like the story of the postseason has been the war of attrition. Like, every team seems to be injured. And people that say the Clippers aren't, they don't have Serge Ibaka, who was a big piece for them. So
correct.
Single team.
But yeah. the Suns are the only team without injuries, right? And they're the team who, by the way, gets to rest the most. But then you have to balance out rest with rust. It's a hard one. It's a very, very hard one. It's not as easy as it looks. And everybody thinks they can be a coach. Everybody thinks these things are easy. And you know what's interesting is when David Blatt had the head coaching job of the Cavaliers, and Colin Sexton is going to join us upcoming top of next hour. Colin obviously didn't play for David Blatt. He was long gone. But the point is that David Blatt caught a lot of heat because, if you remember, he said, you know, being a head coach is like being a fighter pilot. You know, you have all these different decisions to make at a moment's notice. And people kind of laughed it off, like, yeah, really, you're a coach? How many decisions? You really give the ball to LeBron and get the hell out of the way? But it's a lot more to it than that. A lot more to it than that. So I tend to agree that coaching in the regular season is more about massaging egos and getting guys to play hard and getting guys to fight through when they don't have it and to share things and share the basketball. But coaching the postseason, completely different animal. And yes, it is incredibly. There's a reason that one guy won 11 rings. It wasn't just that he had great players, is that he was a great coach. When to play a guy, how to play a guy, how much to play a guy, all these things absolutely positively matter. Yes, John Ramos.
When you're coaching on your AAU teams and stuff on Saturdays or whenever you go to your tournaments, do you have other alternate plans in case somebody doesn't show up or someone gets injured during the game, like one of your star players? Do you have another option you could go to, or things you have planned out that, like, you can go to? Or is it just like, if something happens, you're like, oh, you have to scramble? I mean, as a coach, I assume you have some idea. Oh, you scramble. Okay.
Well, I mean, you have some idea, right? You know, we're playing, there's a big national tournament this weekend. Probably my favorite player to coach, who's not my son, is at a Christian camp in Missouri, right? So, yeah, we got to. There's where we got to kind of figure out how to manage that, how to deal with that, and how to change, you know, how you sub and who you start and things like that. It's also, like, again, this is more AAU basketball, but the rules aren't always the same in any tournament. Some tournaments are running time, some tournaments are stop time, some tournaments are longer, shorter. And what I've learned is, you know, I used to want to start guys and kind of get a few, you know, start my more veteran guys that have played for me more. Now I want to start my best guys to get a lead because the games are so short at times where, especially running clock halves, you just, the games go fast, really fast. So, but to answer your question, yeah, that's where I really like it for other coaching is it helps you learn to adjust on the fly because you have to, you have really no other choice.
Really quickly, Doug, did you see that, I think it's Sierra Canyon. They lost the title game.
Yes.
Yeah. I just thought
they lost to Corona. So for people who don't know, yeah. State of California is still playing the state championship. State Open tournament starts, I think, tonight. But the sectional championships were just concluded last week. That's where you saw Drake and LeBron at Bronny's game. That's Sierra Canyon. They lost to Corona Centennial. Corona is on the way out to Riverside. Riverside's where Kawhi Leonard is. But Corona Centennial didn't have their best player. He was playing in a tournament in front of college coaches instead of playing for his high school team in an effort to be seen. And they still beat Sierra Canyon at Sierra Canyon in front of Drake and...
That's impressive. Yeah. And you did it in front of Maverick Carter and all these guys. Like, that's amazing.
Totally.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, we're joined by the young bull himself, Colin Sexton, joins us here in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Colin, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. What's it like to watch these games? Like, you are, I mean, obviously following you in high school and in college and now as a pro. People can say what you do or don't do, but the one thing that everyone agrees about your game is you are an incredible competitor. And as a competitor, though, you can't play right now and you have to watch all these other guys in your profession play. What's that like for you?
It's very tough. It's definitely very tough. But at the end of the day, I know we're going to be putting on in these positions where we're in the playoffs and we have to make sure that we're ready to go. At the end of the day, like, I'm watching these games, taking bits and pieces of each player and as well as each team, and just pretty much watching the game through and understanding that each possession matters and how even the little things are maybe like a turnover in the first half and the team goes on the 10-0 run, like how the little things like that have affected the game. And just continue to learn basketball. At the end of the day, I'm just watching it and understand the game a little bit better and understand what I know for next season that I can use when I go out there on the floor.
This has been, obviously, you haven't parachuted into a ready-made franchise, ready to compete. You've had, you know, you've had coaching changes mid-season. You know, you've had, you know, player turnover. You have veteran players who aren't necessarily in it for the rebuild. A couple years in, if you could try and explain to the rest of us what it's like for you, what this experience thus far is, how would you explain it?
I would say it's up and down. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be good days, it's going to be bad days, but as long as you just continue to stay true to yourself and just continue to work each and every day like it's your last, and just continue to take the good with the bad and always be happy and always have a good mood. At the end of the day, like, you do what you can control. Certain things you can't, and certain things you can. If you go out there and compete and give it 110% that night, and you left it all out there on the court, then you're able to leave a little bit better knowing that you did so. So I would say that's that's pretty much how I look at it, even though, like, we haven't won and stuff, but I definitely take, like, even the games that we may lose that three points, then I'll take those as learning lessons and things that I can improve on for the next game. So each game and each season is lessons that's going to help you and lessons that you can take away to improve your game.
If Colin Sexton 2021 could grab Colin Sexton 2018 when you come in the league as the eighth pick of the draft 1 year in at Alabama, if you could say, hey, this will help you, what is the one or two things that you know now that you wish you knew coming into the league?
Oh, man. I would say just knowing the game a little bit better and just staying patient. I would say staying patient and waiting your turn and just continue to understand that the way your path and it's going to be different from everybody else's path. You know what I mean? Like, I can't compare myself to anyone, and I won't compare myself to anyone. So, and that's just how I would tell my younger self, and as well as just continue to work, and continue to grind, and everything is going to pay off in itself. Even though I'm a really workaholic, but I would definitely tell my younger self that because, you know, sometimes you feel like you're working and people don't see it. But, yeah, people are definitely starting to see it.
Colin Sexton joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Look, you and Trae Young, obviously there's a rivalry there, not only position-wise, but time in the league-wise. And your games are very, very different. But when you see how he played last night, right? Like, he's a guy that's always been seen as a kind of scorer, you know, a shooter who's a very good passer. You're a guy who's more of a tack, get to the rim guy who can also shoot and score and set others up. You've obviously had the reputation of being better at the defensive end than he is. But you see, what do you see in Trae that's evolving here in the playoffs?
Pretty much just going out there and just playing free. At the end of the day, he's playing free, and he's not worrying about making a mistake. And he's just going out there and doing whatever it takes. And he has really good vets over there. I know Luke Will personally, and I know he's giving him bits and pieces of things that's helping him out there. And you can tell the coach is just allowing him just to play and just play through his mistakes. At the end of the day, it's not going to be no perfect game. So he's doing that, and he's doing really good.
Who's the toughest cover for you? Give me, and I know, you know, in the NBA you switch whatever, but there's this league just has a litany of guards that are unbelievable, yourself included, obviously. But you look around the playoffs, and you know everybody's got one. When you see on the schedule, and I know, like, you're not scared of anybody, so don't take it as that. But when you watch these guys playing, you know, you got Dame, Kyrie obviously is hurt now. You have Trae, you know, there's Steph as well. And then, you know, you look at guys that are still playing in the tournament. Donovan Mitchell has been phenomenal for the most part in the playoffs. Who's the guy who you think is the toughest for you personally to cover?
I would say the toughest person that I've, like coming in when I first came into the league was probably Tony Parker and, like, Kimba, Steph, some of those guys, especially. And then also Bradley Beal's a very tough cover.
Ooh, yeah, good
call. I know every time we play him, I have to guard him, and he's tough. So pretty much every team has a player on there that's a tough cover. There's no easy nights at the point guard position, yeah. No matter the team, whether you're playing the Spurs, whether you're playing Minnesota, like,
Tony's a great call, right? Tony, it feels like Tony's going to go down as, like, the most underrated dude ever in the NBA, because people talk about Duncan and they'll talk about Manu, and, like, hey, Tony Parker's a bucket now, you know, especially, I mean, off the ball screen, that mid-range pull-up was nice before he got older. Okay, let me ask you this. Explain to me the Clippers thing. Did they figure out the matchups? Like, this is two series in a row where they lose the first two, they don't seem to stress over it, and then all of a sudden they hit they downshift, and now they look like the team to beat once again. How can you, as somebody who understands this league at a level above those of us as fans, What is it with the Clippers that they figure out once they get to game three?
Oh, man. Honestly, it's just pretty much how confident they are at the end of the day. Just they're playing with confidence. They're playing with poise. And they don't let anyone rattle them. And you can definitely tell that. Kawhi and PG, Reggie, like, you can just tell they're just out there. And they're just playing and playing free. Even though, like, they were down last series as well as this series, they're not letting anything faze them. And you can definitely tell that. And you can tell how they're making adjustments. It seems like they're just taking the first two games to understand what the team like and then making an adjustment. So, but they can do that because they have some elite guys on that team. So it's definitely fun to watch and to see, like, what adjustments they made from the first game until now.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. I don't know if you saw this. James Harden's listed as doubtful, but that means that he's going to try and give it a go. You ever had one of those, the bad hamstring pulls?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And those things linger. And it just don't allow you to extend and just pretty much slide. It's so many different things, like, from a hamstring perspective, and it takes a while for it to heal. So it's definitely going to be tough for him to get out there tonight and play on that. But if he's good to go, you know what Harden is going to give, especially during playoff times. He's definitely going to show up. So no matter if he has the injury or not, he's going to give it his all. So,
okay, you get switched off onto Giannis. What do you do?
I get switched off on Giannis. I would say just pretty much just load up and
you got to get up in his space, right? So you can't, because if you back off, he comes running at you, gets going downhill, and that's when he gets to his spins. Do you have to get up into his space? Is that as a smaller guard? Is that what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Get up to his space, and then he's going to probably go to the basket. And at that time, you definitely gonna have help. And just pretty much make him pick it up. I know me being smaller, I know I could probably just be able to just get it up under him, and just once he picks it up, then he'd be able to pass it. So, but I definitely probably need a little bit of help.
All right, same thing KD. Now, KD, obviously, P.J. Tucker's bigger and stronger than you, but there's a dude who's just getting up into space and bodying him. You get switched off into KD. Do you make him go right? Do you make him go left? Like, what do you do when you have that 7-foot monster handling the ball and you get ice out?
I'll just make him put it on the floor. Make him put it on the floor because, he's just pretty much just going to roll you to sleep into maybe the between heel or the cross right into the left head though. So with KD, he's totally different. And make him put it on the floor because he's always looking at left to right cross as well. So he can shoot it from anywhere. So just pretty much when he picks it up, just try to crowd him before he's able to get it up. And because if not, he's shooting over anybody in the league.
Okay, you come driving down the lane and you see Gobert there, right? I mean, you got a nice floater game, right? And obviously everybody wants to do what Ja tried to do, where you just kind of try and put him in, like go get you a footer and dunk on him. What's the mindset like when you get going downhill and you see somebody like Rudy Gobert waiting for you at the rim?
I would say just pretty much just see if he steps up yet. If he doesn't step up, then I'll shoot the floater. But if he does step up, and just pretty much maybe do a late drop-off pass to the big, like get him engaged. It just pretty much depends. But if I have a chance to float on top of him, I definitely will.
Colin Sexton joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio, joining us on behalf of Hotels.com. I love Hotels.com. I love the app. It's got to be cool, though, right now. When you travel, you use the app, and you can use the filter. You got to filter out all the 4 and 3 stars, right? You're only going for 4, 5 stars these days. Like this, it's got to be a different feeling to not worry about getting the best deal on anything other than the best hotels in town.
Yeah, for sure. Just being able to get a good deal. It's nothing like getting a good deal on a hotel. And with Hotels.com, if you're watching the game, you can win a free trip. First 100. And you got to make sure you're watching 20 plus more fast break points. And you go do that, and you make sure you go on visit the fast break getaway page, hotels.com, and you'll get a chance to win a free trip. So make sure you go do that, because who doesn't like free trips? I know I do.
One trip you're taking this summer?
Maybe to Florida with my family, maybe before the start of the season.
Are you going? You go in Miami? You go in the East? You go in Tampa? Are you going like Tom Brady on us? Like which? I mean, I'm not gonna track you, and I'm not gonna stalk you. I'm just kind of intrigued by this.
Oh no, I'm going Orlando. I'm going straight to Universal Studios. Straight. I like Universal Studios, Island Adventures, all that. I like to get on roller coasters.
Ooh, okay. No. Have you always liked roller coaster? When you were like a little, because I was a little kid, I was super scared of them. And then in high school, we went to Six Flags, and you know, just trying to be a tough guy. Like I got on and I got over the fear. Now I love them. Was there ever a moment where you were scared of roller coasters?
It's never been a moment I was scared of roller coasters. I've been on some ones that made me just like, oh, maybe a little bit, but I've never been afraid of any roller coasters. I kind of love them.
Colin, who wins the NBA championship? And I know it's hard because Brooklyn's banged up, and a lot of people pick Brooklyn. The Clippers are still tied at two. If you were a gambling man, who would be your pick?
I'm not sure at this time. Honestly, I just watch the games just because I love the game. I'm not deciding on who wins. I hope it's more games so I can just continue to watch. That's how I look at it.
Colin, thanks for joining us, man. Congrats on another tremendous year in the NBA. We look forward to talking to you in the near future.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Nota B. Gay joins us from NBC Sports and the Golf Channel. He joins us. Nota, I'm not sure if you're aware, but you're on the show that won the Pro-Am at Torrey. Going back, was that 3 years ago? 3 years ago. And when we were in the South course, others were on the North course. The South are more difficult to courses. And we have not got nary a call from a caddy or a PGA player asking for advice, Nota. I think there's arrogance on the case of golfers.
Well, I mean, it's shocking to me, number one, golfers of your caliber having all of that experience and success on a venue that's hosting the biggest championship in golf right now. So, yeah, I think there's a little bit of arrogance on the part of the players and maybe the caddy. Just, you know, pick up the phone. Pick the brains of, you know, these guys that went around, had some success.
Do you think Andy Warhol, Andy Warhol would have had a chance to talk to Monet? He would have talked to Monet. Of course he would. I'm kidding, of course. No, to be Gay joining us.
I think he would have.
Yes.
If he had the chance. But it's, again, you know, sometimes you let these opportunities slip through your fingers.
This is the first year of where the new schedule actually has become the new schedule. Like it was supposed to be last year, but because of COVID, you know, it moved the Masters to October and everything got kind of to be a mess. But from your estimation, how has it changed the season? How has it changed golf, the new arrangement of the majors being in this order?
I think it's been great. A couple things. I mean, it's great to see that all of the governing bodies. It's interesting. Golf's the only sport that doesn't own the rights to its own major championships. You know, the NFL owns the rights to the Super Bowl, and the World Series belongs to Major League Baseball. But the major championships belong to the USGA, the Masters, the PGA of America, and the R&A. And so the PGA Tour at times is left on the outside looking in. And for the governing bodies to cooperate like they did, the PGA moved its date to May. The PGA Tour moved the Players' Championship back to its March date. So now, starting with the Players' Championship, which is, I guess, become a de facto fifth major, you know, you have this great convergence of players and golf and attention on the sport once a month. Over a five-month period, which I think is remarkable. It's fun. Gives us a little time to breathe in between events and, you know, create these interesting storylines. And when you have players like Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka going at it in the media, it makes it even a little bit more fun.
Yeah, what do you think of their media back and forth?
I think it's intriguing. I think it's, you know, two guys that, you know, maybe don't particularly like each other. You know, you're not going to see them hugging at the end of a round or anything like that. But they do, you know, I don't think they disrespect each other. I think golf hasn't gone quite that far. But, you know, they just have a difference of opinion on a couple things. And it's it's nice to see players sort of air their grievances and just get it out there versus, you know, doing it or you know, sort of taking the high road in terms of no comment, so to speak, because I think that we appreciate it in the media. It gives us something to talk about, and it just kind of lets us know these guys are human too. You know, we all go through life. There's a handful of people along the way we don't really like, and we voice our concerns and opinions, and these guys aren't any different.
Doug B. Gay joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show. Obviously, Torrey, there's two guys that have been the two guys that the public wants to see win it, Torrey. We're not going to see Tiger, obviously, for obvious reasons. But Phil coming off of PGA, I mean, like, look, it wasn't a miracle that he did it before, but in San Diego, what are the realistically, what are the chances he can go back-to-back majors in a place which would so embrace him?
Not great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a tougher
fit. So you're saying there's a chance?
I mean, a very, very, really, really, really tiny chance. I don't know. I mean, the guy made us all look foolish at the PGA. I mean, he was a 200-to-1 shot and, you know, cashed in for somebody who went and put a few ducats on him. But, you know, I just don't see it. It just would be beyond my wildest dreams. But you know what? Tiger winning on a broken leg in 2008. Yep. You know, maybe this is the event and the venue where crazy things happen.
All right. So if you were a betting man, who you like?
And I am a betting man. Well, okay. So hang with me here. I'm going to kind of go through some, you know, some textbook golf analysis, similar to the analysis that you would have given some players and caddies if they would have called you
right.
about Torrey.
Right.
Okay, so Torrey Pines is like the fifth toughest golf course to make a putt inside 10 feet. Everybody knows Poana greens. They're slopey, they're bumpy, they're fast. It makes it hard to make putts. And there's one player back in 2019, the last full season we had before COVID, that performed remarkably well. He didn't win any of the events on the West Coast swing, but in two of the five events, so five of the most difficult golf courses to make a 10-foot putt are on the West Coast. Okay, Siwoo Kim finished top five in two out of those five events. So I think that he just has an ability to putt. You know, he's a Players Champion, so it's obvious he can handle the pressure of the big stage.
Right,
and I just think that he has this ability to putt well on these Poana greens, and I think it could serve him to a huge benefit this week. So that's my pick. That's my sneaky pick.
By the way, Nota is here courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for the most recent odds to win the U.S. Open. Fun props such as what will the winning score be, what will the cut line be, what will the length of the winner's final putt be, along with head-to-head golfer matchups for the U.S. Open. John Rahm, coming off that kind of bizarre, you know, DQ withdrawal, is the favorite. Brooks and DJ are 16-to-1. And Bryson, of course, Bryson DeChambeau won the last U.S. Open. That was in September. He's at 18-to-1, along with Xander Schauffele, and then Spieth, Rory, Colin Morikawa. They're at 20-to-1 and 22-to-1, respectively. What about Brooks and Bryson? I think they had the chance to play together, and I think Brooks said, like, nah, I'm not feeling it. Who's playing better coming in?
Well, to tell you how much interest you actually had in my pick, what I just gave you, you didn't even mention Siwoo Kim at 150-to-1.
I understand,
You'll
but it's not.
You
Bet Online gave me all these odds, and I had to give them the higher odds. You gave us the sneaky pick.
Just throw a C note on there.
I got it. Throw a C note, and you get 150-to-1. I get it. Yes.
We're good. You don't even have to send me a percentage for my information.
I'll send you a percentage.
Out of the kindness of my heart.
If I throw it at 151 and he wins, I would definitely throw you a bone.
You know, Rahm is the favorite for a reason.
What is the reason? What is the reason that Rahm's the favorite?
Well, he was 18 under through three rounds at the Memorial, just shot third round 64, which is the second best score of the entire year. in 61 rounds that he's played this year. He's had 8 top tens in events that weren't team events or match play events. And so he was starting to really trend in the right direction. What the only thing that's been holding him back is just one particular round where at times he'll have a tendency to shoot one or two over, and he just gets a little bit too far behind and just hasn't quite been able to close the gap and win some of these tournaments. I think that he locked into something. He found something. At his press conference today, he didn't get up there and complain about PGA Tour COVID policy. He didn't get up there and blame anybody for what happened. He just said, hey, it is what it is. We're in a pandemic. These things happen. Let's move on. I'm happy that I have a chance to play here. That tells me that the guy's focusing on the right things, and he's going out there with an attitude that, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter. I'm playing great golf. I'm just going to go out and do it again.
No, man. Enjoy, Torrey. Thanks so much for joining us. Awesome to catch up. Our thanks to Bet Online, and I will send you at least a bottle of your favorite wine or whatever if your pick comes and wins. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for your time, guys. Bye.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.